Hello and welcome to the Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations podcast. This series explores themes and topics relating to all things digital and the shift we're experiencing as the digital era impacts our lives everywhere. My name is George Seiler, I'm from the Ludic Group, and this episode is brought to you by the authors of the book, Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations, published by Navarro and available on Amazon, Kindle, and in bookstores near you. This episode is about why organizations should play games. We are joined today by the authors Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Garrick Jones, dialing in from Tokyo.
Hello.
With our special guest, Anne Coppins.
Hi.
So Anne, you're the chief game changer at Gamification Nation and a leading expert in gamification design for employee and learner engagement. Thank you so much for being here with us.
You're very welcome.
Let's start off with an extract from the book.
In the book we wrote, games give purpose, ritual, meaning, excitement, belonging, combat without killing, dangerous experiences without dying, skill building and more. Games, like stories, are often totally undervalued and misunderstood when people say, it's just a game. And you're a chief game changer. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, first of all, when you can pick your own title, you got to pick a good one.
Right.
So that's the first thing. But I've actually come to gamification from the world of learning and development and change management. So early in my career, I was a learning and development manager, change manager, and I always used games to get my messages across, to get people engaged. And then in the early 2000s, I stumbled upon the term gamification. I was like, what's that? And then realized that's what I've been doing for pretty much all of my career. So,
what is gamification? Sounds painful.
That was painful. Nobody got hurt, not even a game. Just a dictionary and a spell checker. They don't like it.
Right.
But gamification in my world is basically adding game psychology, game mechanics and game dynamics to non-game processes. So that could be learning, that could be change, that could be health, it could be anything that's a process where you can add a bit of game spice to get better results.
And what can you use games for?
Pretty much for everything, I feel. My mind works like a game. So anytime I need to achieve something, I will set a challenge. The challenge will then be gamified in some way with maybe a reward, maybe something that I really want to go for. I make it interesting. I might build in a storyline that's a bit more unusual. So the reason why we play games is because we relate to it. It's something that's innate to all of us. So we all played to explore our environment. We've never lost that. Some of us think that because we've been in business, we should be serious. But that inner child still plays. And that still pops up occasionally to say, look, you know, I want to play. I want to get excited. I want to be motivated. And I think that's the power of games.
Is games just for engagement of people? Make them feel good?
I think it can do more, especially if we apply games and make games for serious purposes, like the work we do, is, you know, you can actually achieve more with a game and with a story than you can with just telling the facts. I mean, we retain 22 times more information if we use a story or a game. We've got cases of very boring, very, I suppose, detailed material being told to salespeople around cybersecurity, for example, which is a recent project we worked on, where basically sales agents weren't comfortable explaining cybersecurity. We made it into a board game, and all of a sudden, they're 90 times more or 90% more comfortable talking about cyber because they have scenarios. They remember the scenario that they lost the game with. They remember the banter they had sitting around the table going through the game. So there's really good reasons why we should use it more.
So for engagement, for learning, for
absolutely
scenario planning, for wayfinding, for finding and planning a way into the future.
Absolutely.
I love the idea of games and gamification. And I especially love when you talk about using the idea of mechanics, dynamics, and aesthetics of those three processes in how you create games. for things that are other than games. And I was wondering if you could just spend a little time talking, because I'm the techie geek sometimes. what do you mean by the game dynamics, game mechanics, and game aesthetics in that term?
So a game mechanic like a leaderboard inherently introduces competition into a situation. A game mechanic like an emoji, like a like on social media, introduces the social, more caring social aspect. So the dynamic you create is actually dependent on the game mechanics you use. And to be aware on how the two can impact a design is vitally important to understand.
So can we think of the mechanics as the bits and pieces, the elements and components of a game, and the dynamics, the rules, or the way the mechanics interact and play out over time?
Yes, and also it's the dynamic that sort of extract the emotion out of it. So most game designers design for emotion, design for impact. So in gamification, and especially in the business world, we don't see emotion enough. And we don't get that out of people enough, I feel. And I think that's where games can help us elicit those emotions, and that's where you need the game dynamic for.
So digital and digital games clearly have become ubiquitous, absolutely everywhere, from the very young to the very old. Everybody is playing games, not just physical games, but online games. Have you seen how that's impacting how game playing is happening in organisations?
Yes, for sure. I think most systems today, so if you speak to a young person going into the world of work, having to work with, and I will, you know, excuse myself to Microsoft, but with boring old Microsoft, which we see in most offices, you know, that's not an experience that young people today are growing up with. They're growing up with social media, where you have instant feedback, instant likes, instant emojis, instant whatever you want to message out there. And yet we're stuck with an email, we're stuck with a Word document, often the tools that don't necessarily reflect where we've gotten to with today's technology. So I think the more we evolve, the more we'll like to bring games into the world, or that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah,
for
it
sure.
Feels like there's a disconnect. There's quality of the type of games you can play outside of work is far superior than the type of games.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. And I think we're in for a huge surprise in terms of what's coming down the line with the younger generation. I mean, for example, if I was round at Paul's house the other day, and his son Ben, who's 10, sort of came in and was doing some stuff, and he wasn't doing his homework. Paul asked him, "Why aren't you doing your homework? Do you remember this, Paul?" Mm. And he was coding a new game on an app that he has because he enjoys coding and he enjoys making games. And 10 years old. That to me is a game changer, excuse the pun.
Yeah, you're welcome to my world. So, I mean, I love the fact that the likes of Microsoft with Minecraft have actually thought that through. So I've given you the negative, but I'll give you the positive also. Minecraft actually allows you to code and see what it does. And I think that aspect of coding is amazingly innovative and also attracting more young people to it. Swift does the same for Apple coding, so you can build your own game environment as you go and learn to code in the process. So I think if we learn from the big tech companies, we can see that it works. When it comes to the large corporates, what I hear very often is, "Oh, but we're serious business. Why should we on earth play a game?" And, you know, that's an interesting one.
Is gamification just for millennials and young people and people that are geeks and love to play computer games?
They're the first ones that will take it up. Yeah. They're also going to be your most critical audience because they've grown up with games, they know games, and they'll know how to break the game as such. But in reality, the research studies out there say that it's actually Generation X and older that are doing more gaming during work hours than millennials when presented with gamification of their applications. The reason for that for them is it's still novelty. For the younger generation, it's business as usual. We expect it. So it's interesting to see that dynamic. And that has changed over the last 4 or 5 years. So 4 or 5 years ago, it would have been the opposite way around.
Are you seeing similar things around the world?
Yes, I am. I would say Europe and North America have been, I suppose, earlier adopters than, let's say, Asia and the Middle East. But the growth of gamification in the workplaces is larger and faster in Asia and the Middle East, in my view. And actually, at the peak of Pokemon Go, I was in Singapore and I nearly got knocked out by a granny with her tablet trying to catch a Pokemon. Just one of those things. You wouldn't see that here.
I was really taken by something you just said, just to go back, when you were talking about Microsoft and Swift and something about learning. When you gave the example of the new coding machines not only allow you to play the game, but also to code at the same time. So you coding and seeing the immediate impact of your code and still playing in a rich context. And to have that immediate feedback and that rich context evolving with you is a really powerful function of the digital world, which only the very best learning systems were providing that level of feedback, you know, a number of years ago. The question for me is, how do we take that powerful learning understanding where you're in the context and it's evolving with you and you're learning from it at the same time, coding and experiencing, how do you take that into, say, a non-gamified world?
Well, actually, most of the world of learning is still non-gamified, apart from learning systems saying that they've got a gamified system when they've added points, badges and leaderboards, which, you know, is a completely different debate. But yeah. I think your point to the co-creation aspect of it, we haven't seen that yet. And I think that's where it's super powerful. Imagine a whole team working together to build the best application to suit their workflow. I mean, that to me is where the power lies. It's basically giving the people in your organization the tools that they want, as opposed to the tools you impose on them. So I think there is a massive shift change happening, starting to happen. I think it will take us probably another 5 years before we see it en masse in the workplace.
And Anne, how would you see that interconnectivity happening in terms of the things that are being built through sort of games and gamified processes tying into the things that organizations can measure and actually get those KPIs working?
This is where it's funny. I think in games, you can track way more than in any given other system. In fact, most LMSs are still what they call SCORM compliant, which means you send a whole package of a course and that's all you track. So you track the completion of the whole course. In a game, you track, have they clicked to open? Have they clicked to play? Have they answered the quiz questions? How did they score? So there's a whole bunch more mechanics that you can measure. And I think that's where the power of games will come in once organizations understand how it works. Because I think we're a bit away from that yet.
Why do you think gamification has been used so little so far in work and in learning?
The expense, I think, is one prohibiting factor. I think a lot of organizations are careful when they're investing in new technology. And because their systems are not ready made for it, I think that's where the hurdle still is. Some have, I suppose, dipped their toes in and had good results. Others are still thinking about it, and others have already moved on and dismissed it as, look, we're not going to do that because it's too expensive or our people won't like it, which I would highly contest. But
What would a big investment look like?
Depends on the organization.
Not in terms of financial amounts, okay. But more in terms of if an organization was to really go all in, what might that look like?
So you mean kind of building a whole application?
In terms of building it into its intrinsic systems.
I think, I mean, the very nature of introducing games or gamification means for most organizations today that you're introducing a change management program, a behavioral change. And unless you're willing to support that. So what I typically say to organizations, start with a pilot program, but pick the pilot in a very critical area where you can see the effect. And with a team that you might say, ooh, there's some critics, there's some very open people. and see how they respond. If you can persuade the critics, selling the rest of it will be easy. If you can't persuade them, you need to tweak it until you can get a good measure of what's happening, what's good, and how you can transform. But the very nature of introducing games when you've never had any is a change management program. And a lot of systems organizers don't see that. So a lot of the platforms on the market today think, you know, we just pop the platform in, happy days, everything will be good. Mm. And then you find people not using it.
And as you were saying, it's a shift in mindset at the leadership level, if an investment is required, but also that this is actually worth doing. It's going to create value and long-term value.
Yeah.
Have you got any stories about where you've turned around some leadership mindsets around why bother playing games?
Yes. And my first question always when they raise, oh, but we're a serious business, we can't possibly play games, I always ask them, have you ever done business over a game of golf, gone to a rugby game, watched soccer? And most of them sheepishly have to admit that they probably have. So it's not necessarily new, but it has to be translated into words that senior management actually can relate to. And I think that's where we get the true power of it. Now, we worked with one organization where management was resistant and said, well, look, if you can persuade that particular team, they're always negative. You know, if you can swing them around, we're good to go.
So start with the hard cases first.
Totally. And I also encourage them to do that. Okay, give me the hardest group.
Yes.
I'll show you if it works. And, you know,
let's play a game with it.
Yeah, it was around project management in training. Right. These guys were highly analytical, very, I suppose, up in their game. And they came from gaming backgrounds, a lot of them. They were in the media sector. But they were critical of anything to do with learning and what could you possibly tell me. When we played the game, in fact, they all got so into it that we had to remind them to take breaks, etc. And their project management methodology was adhered to much more as a result of the game, because people saw, oh, that's why we do this. That's why we now use games, or that's why we now use processes that facilitate what we need to get done. And that was all brought on by introducing a game that we needed to play.
I'm intrigued by your experience of what makes a good game. So, as you said, we play games for thousands and thousands of years. People still design bad games. Monopoly is a great game that's lasted for a long time, but there's still flaws in Monopoly, right? It's got a rule in it that essentially means that if you're rich, you quickly become richer, and if you're poor, you quickly become poorer. So often the end result of that game is family arguments and no more playing Monopoly till next Christmas or next year.
Yes.
So in a business context, what makes a good game, do you think?
Yes. I think, and Monopoly is a classic example. I mean, in our house, my sister always got the rich street and had a hotel on it. So I vividly remember those days. And, you know, I think if you think about games, it's the balancing of the game, the interaction. So you want to think through as a designer, how does that work? What are people going to say? And play test a lot. For the cybersecurity game, normally what's recommended in the industry is that you test a minimum 100 times.
Wow.
Now, in most organizations, you don't get that time frame. So we tested about 16 times before it went live with the first version. And then we revisited that version after two more playtests for the second revision, which stuck. So if you can get up to 20, 25 times, you need to think about, is it fair to everyone? Does everybody have a chance to win? And what else are they experiencing when they're playing? And if competition or conflict is not what you want, then you want to make the game type or the game choice much more collaborative.
Yeah, so thinking about what the purpose of playing the game is in the first place.
Absolutely.
Is it a learning game? And if it's learning, you're learning about what? Is it to drive a certain type of behaviour?
Yep.
And so on.
I keep on remembering back to my father, who, when he was confronted with his first computer, was completely dumbfounded and didn't want to interact with it at all. until we gave him a copy of Tetris. I don't know if you remember that. And it was an old floppy disk. And we taught him how to switch on the computer and put Tetris in. And he became completely addicted to the point where it became a little bit antisocial and we had to have a chat with him. But and I hope he doesn't hear this podcast because he'd be horrified. But it really did the trick. And it was the games that allowed him to, you know, simple and enjoy the games. They allowed him to open the door to, you know, a life using computers and spreadsheets, and took away the it took away all the fear and the angst, you know, relating to that. I think that's still very true today. It's games allow us to open up and also enjoy and be in a safe space with known rules and enjoy ourselves as we simulate some of the experiences we need to have. And then in that sort of psychological state of playfulness and so on, we're able to have real and deep conversations. At the same time, it promotes very, very deep meaning and memory psychologically. So it's operating on many, many levels. It creates a safe place. It allows us to move forward. It allows us to interact with each other in a human way. And then it allows us to kind of remember what we've experienced in a powerful way.
Yeah, and actually, imagine if our politicians were all forced to play something like a Sim City or a city builder with resource management and etc. Instant feedback on how their decisions are affecting everybody. I mean, the same
but
can
it's
be
like
said.
The Buckminster Fuller World game, which he was very keen to have everyone play.
What's some of the most surprising areas you've seen gamified? So we've seen, for example, you know, surgeons learning surgical techniques through game playing, ideally not on humans or animals.
No, but there's a crazy fact. I mean, it's I think surgeons who play games and not necessarily medical related games, but surgeons who've played competitive games online and so on, have better faculties at remembering surgical procedures than surgeons who've not.
Yes. And actually, it's interesting where people actually use games. I've seen it in role-playing games for people in the hospitality sector, where if they have 5 minutes in between customers, let's say a hotel reception, they play a role-playing game. They're immediately learning how to deal with different types of customers, but also improving their English. So what was interesting is that although the game was set to teach them about hospitality and customer service skills, actually what the staff used it for was mainly learning English.
Yeah, and contextually useful English for their work as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see this this trend going? So projecting out 5-10 years, what do you think is the future here of games?
I think we'll see more applications with games in it, for sure. We're still on a hyper-growth cycle. And the most expansive areas are actually the new markets, as in the emerging markets. And for them, it's mobile first. So I think we'll see much more mobile-based games. I mean, and many more cross-platform games. So if you think about Fortnite as an example of a cross-platform game, that's the type of thing I see working in the workforce, because most of us use multiple platforms anyway. So we're on our mobile, we're on the road, maybe using a tablet, we're in work using a desktop or a laptop. So those kinds of things I think we'll see much more of.
And to be devil's advocate, you mentioned playing Fortnite. Well, to the millions of people out around the world who are playing Fortnite, possibly at the expense of everything else, if I was a leader in an organisation looking to use games and bring games in, that might just have put me off. Do I really want my organisation online playing the equivalent of Fortnite instead of doing their work?
Yes, it's a good question. And actually, what does Fortnite teaches us? It teaches us to collaborate. It teaches us to battle. It teaches us to be strategic. I guess there are traits that as a business you still may want in your people. So whilst you may think it's, you know, wasting time, well, in reality, they're also developing very valuable skills. If you look at the bigger franchise multiplayer online games, For years, people have played them. Now, I would hire a guild or a tribe leader from one of those games in a heartbeat if I needed a team managed or a project managed. Why? Because they have learned to virtually motivate people to do things, and often boring things repetitively, in order to win a game. Now, isn't that what the game of business is all about?
Do you see this coming yet? Multiplayer business games where people in the organisation either compete together or even compete against other organisations?
Yes, we do see that. As in, office politics have been around for since forever. So I would say that's a very elaborate game. A lot of people got very good at, often to the detriment of their colleagues. So I don't think that game is unknown to business. But yes, we are seeing leagues of where people are testing one another. The same for just social purposes. So we've seen them in sports for quite some time. But testing each other for knowledge against... So in academia, you have universities playing against universities. In business, you have people competing in MBA games, in business simulations. So you do see it more and more often as an accepted form of training. And I think that's where there's a massive opportunity.
Yeah, I could certainly imagine a time and place where I have a choice. I can either play out my ideas in the real world in my organisation and take a risk, or I can go into my virtual world and play it out in the game and see what the impact is.
Exactly. And what's interesting is that where we have simulations for a specific, very relevant part of the business. So there's an example of a bank who created a simulated retail branch for the same bank. And a lot of the more senior managers went in after hours to play the game to see how it would work out and how the various resources they had to manage worked out in reality. So they taught themselves to become better. The same in factories. So we see it wherever there has been a game developed. People use it, but let them use it in their own time. And what you'll find from the statistics is that people actually use it outside of office hours naturally because they are curious to see, how can I get better as an individual?
You touched on a very interesting point around looking to how the profile of a gamer is and using that as a basis for finding the right people for the right types of roles. What about those people who perhaps aren't that deep into the game? Do you think we're going to get to a point where you'll have people whose traits are well documented through their interactions on the games and almost to the detriment of people who perhaps aren't playing the games and it isn't known what they're good at or not good at? Do you think that will become an issue for us in the future?
I think it's an interesting question. I think there is much more known about, let's say, millennials in general and even the generations beyond millennials because they've been online much more. I grew up when there was not that much online, thank goodness for that. And, you know, at the same time, you know,
it's interesting you say thank goodness for that. Yeah. Why do you say that?
Some of the things I used to get up to, I don't want documented for future reference. So, I mean, I was making games as a kid as well. So it was funny. It always stuck with me as a trait in any case. But I don't think people that don't play will not have a place. I think engaging those people to tempt their luck at play will be a challenge. I often have, so we work mainly in the HR and learning space. So we often have HR managers coming to workshops and they say, I don't like games, I don't play games, and I'm coming to your workshop to see, is this at all useful? And it's a win for me if they walk out of the workshop thinking, actually, there's something in there. There's something we can do with it. And some of them convert completely and actually go and develop a game for either recruitment or motivation or whatever. But, you know, I think they'll be confronted with it much more over time.
And as you say, it is going to become more and more embedded. Mm-hmm. Into the things we do, from the swiping down of the news to reminders and buttons and things that keep us engaged and interested in a particular website. It's not a gamification is not necessarily about playing a discrete game for a particular period of time. It might just be small things that happen all along the way.
Yeah, I see it more as nudges, little nudges along the way that keep you moving forward. I mean, one of my favorite learning examples is Duolingo, where you basically get nudged every day to log on and earn your winning streak. Now, imagine in a HR setting, you show up for work and you have an unbroken streak of showing up on time every day for the last year.
Right, yeah.
What software does that? At the moment, I can't think of any.
I'm struck continuously by how we're having a conversation about the gamification, but we could just as easily be having our conversation about adaptability. Adaptability is our crazy word for what we think is coming down the line in terms of games and apps and suites of apps that people create collaboratively or that organizations use to kind of enable the work that comes down. And we say in that chapter that we think the future of all businesses is they'll be more like software businesses than they will be like organizational businesses and so on in the future.
And I hope that they'll take the apps business as the apps business and not like the ERP systems business. Mm. Because yes. I think it's the ERP systems that are killing our collaboration. And whereas apps have proven to give that, I suppose, confined space within which people work.
That's fascinating because for me, it talks about open and closed systems. An ERP system is a giant closed system. And we know that that's a fixed framework that people have no flexibility in. And it leads to stifling of individual expression and also motivation. And yet, these are the ways that we're controlling some of our largest organizations. Whereas the app suite and bringing in massive flexibility and constant evolution of the field of apps is much more an open system, which is much more powerful and more survivable. But also open systems are things that are systems that we engage with and we play with and are more flexible and more and give us more of an outcome. I think they have more evolutionary life in them in time. So my prediction, of course, is that ERP systems will die in time because they're fixed and controlled, whereas the app suites and the app field will just evolve and continue to evolve and grow.
Yes, I sure hope so.
And do you think the games that people play in organizations will need to or will move towards the sort of quality that they experience outside? You know, as you say, from Fortnite to these immersive either sports games or fitness games or combat games even. Mm. The experience, much like learning, is very different internally that you've done a game if you've got a leaderboard,
yes,
as you say. Or a point system, that's gamification. Well,
it's boring.
Boring.
It's boring gamification. And actually, if you use things like just points and leaderboards, you're making something that people do naturally and sort of a carrot reward dangling in front of them. Oh, you'll get a point if you do a little bit more of it. Take the carrot away. And people say, well, I can't get anything for it, so I'm not bothered anymore. It's a superficial and bad gamification. I'd love for our gamification in the workplace to look much more like the Fortnites, the World of Warcraft, the esports, because that's where you get truly immersive contact. Will it go there? I doubt it. If we can get as far as somewhere in between, I think we'll do fantastically well. One of the examples I love in gamification for learning is Classcraft, which has a very cool interface. So you have amazing characters in tribes. It was developed by a teacher for his students to run over the course of a year. And the graphics in that are fascinating and fantastic. I'd love to see that in corporates. But will it go there? I question.
Well, these things have huge budgets often to make the level of graphics. They have Hollywood film-like budgets to make. On the other hand, if it's something that is a platform where you can simulate your organization and some of the main processes and ways of working within a game environment, then it has long-term use.
Absolutely.
And maybe that's a direction that the gamification will go in.
I hope so. We're doing our bit for that.
Right.
So we definitely want to go down that line. Currently, what I see from a lot of the gamification platforms, we work platform agnostic at the moment. So it means that we basically see a variety of the things that they can do. And most gamification platforms haven't stretched far enough. They haven't gone all the way to the graphical and the great feel of a game. They've put together the mechanics, which if you're a good game designer and a good gamification designer, you can do something with. But it actually does still take that skill for someone to put it together, which if you put it in the hands of corporates, will get misused, will not actually be very effective. So that's where I think we have a bridge to cross yet, and I'd love to see it much more interesting.
Have you seen in any organizations yet a gamification team or department within an organization? So we have now the learning team. Do we have the game team in organizations yet?
Only in game companies so far. So, and not many others. So a game design team, what we do see is game designers joining the learning team and then often being told, oh, but that's not what we do around here. Mm. You know, so there is a disconnect still. I'd love it to be there more. What we are seeing, though, is a shift towards experience builders. So you have many more. So you have customer experience, learning experience, employee experience builders. And I think if we can go under that title and sneak in that door, I think we'll be doing well.
You talk a lot about the organizational mindset towards games. So what are some of the things that practical things that organizations can do today to shift more towards a game-orientated mindset?
I think the game type that works for most organizations are quests. I mean, most of us have engaged in a quest one way or another. You can run quests in a non-digital fashion and in a digital fashion. A little bit of support from digital can make it travel longer and allows for multinationals to play together. So, and you don't even have to invest in new systems for that. So we did a well-being game to beat the January blues for one company. And what we used was their internal communication system, which was Yammer at the time. So very much use what you've got, make it interesting. We put people together in teams, had them sort of motivate each other to do a little bit of exercise every week. And then whoever and whichever team reported the most exercise with pictures and dates, etc. We did get them to document everything. Then won a prize for the whole team at the end of the month. What it also did, which was interesting, it also raised collaboration across offices, because all of a sudden I sit in London, I knew my Brazilian counterpart, and all of a sudden I had a connection there and said, I need to talk to the person who's in marketing in Brazil. Can you get me in touch with them? And that also happened. So
it's creating new connections.
Absolutely.
Yeah, reinforcing learning.
Yeah, it was much more than just the January blues that we beat. We beat the numbers from the previous year for January, and we made connections that they never made before. So those were side benefits that we didn't ourselves plan on having. So it was fantastic to see.
Yeah, it's great. I love this point about using what you have, because we all, you know, many people now are wearing fitness tracking devices, for example, or Strava or the open systems. So you have the ability to measure what people are doing. So that's great.
Yeah, that was the easy upload. So the ones with the Fitbit had the easy thing. The ones that didn't have, let's say, Fitbits or smartwatches or any of those things, they actually had to upload a picture of them in the gym or them at the soccer field and whatever. So, which was also fun, because that created, oh, wow, I didn't know you looked like this.
Yeah.
Or I didn't know you liked yoga, or I didn't know you liked rock climbing. So it was lots of things people were finding out about one another that they never knew before.
Hmm. What are some of your key takeaways and practical tips? Anne, let's start with you, please.
So if I was going to give organizations practical advice, it would be to start with a pilot, to start small and test it out. And then to identify the gamers within the company and get them involved into redesigning either a process or getting them involved in co-creation of whatever game you want them to do. Start small, see where it takes you, and don't be afraid to tap into the resources you have, because you'll be surprised what they can come up with.
Thank you. And Garrick?
I think the most exciting thing for me about this conversation are the takeaways about the future of work. Specifically, whereas design thinking is really getting traction today, and it's been about 10 years for design thinking to start to become a mainstream way of thinking in work. I know, for example, McKinsey have just really signed up for design thinking as a key component for the future of work. I predict that the future after design thinking is going to be game thinking. And game thinking, specifically relating to collaboration and people working together and gaming together, as Anne was referring to make their workflows and to come up with their organizationals together through using game thinking and game frameworks. And my tip is for leaders to get on the bandwagon with game thinking.
Thank you. And Paul?
I would challenge leaders to start from the question, what can't be gamified? Bringing games and gamification into an organization isn't just about leaderboards and points and scoring. Yes, it is about lots of little nudges and elements that can be put in to gamify specific parts of work, specific parts of learning. But also it can be used for a whole range of activities, from recruitment to interviewing, for skill building, connection building, scenario testing, and so on, which makes learning and building towards the future, in fact, faster, less risky, and probably cheaper in the long run than doing it without games. I think for organisations who are not playing games, they're the ones missing out.
You've been listening to a Ludic podcast, Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organisations. Thank you for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast series, and we look forward to hearing your thoughts and having you join us next time.